So the AI handles the non-emergency stuff, but the AI has been trained. If this could be an emergency, throw it to the human. Like right away, if in doubt, the human takes over.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solenox. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the AI Advantage. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. We have a special guest today. We have Dr. Bill Connerly, economics consultant. So Bill, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Great chatting with you, Solomon.
So tell a little bit about the audience, about who you are. You know, you have such a wide breadth of what you've done, so there's so much to go for, but just kind of a little bit of your background and, like, you know, on the economic side.
Yeah. Well, it's a wide breadth with economics at the core. I fell in love with economics when I was 16 years old, as not many 16-year-olds do, but I was good at math, but thought that was boring. Interested in business and public policy, but thought that lacked foundation. And then I got into economics and I just loved it. Got the PhD. I spent the first part of my career as a corporate economist and then the second part of my career as a consultant. And what I try to do is help business leaders understand how changes in the economy impact them. So I consider my two challenges helping business leaders figure out what they should be watching for, what should be on their radar screen. And secondly, helping them understand what should be on their to-do list. They're all smart enough to figure out problems, but there's so much information about such a wide range of topics that I help them focus on the economic issues of greatest importance.
You know, so it's rather interesting to have it because in terms of the economics, more on a macro scale of it, of thinking just in terms of you having to deal with on mid-market of different on C-suite folks of having to deal with CEOs or CFOs. And because you're getting more on a larger scale, like, where are you seeing the side of where C-suite, that where it changes the dynamics on a business side? Does that make sense of now we're getting into a much larger with potential geo and so forth else? What are you thinking that on company side from your experience, what is the focal or the focus points, what they're looking for and where the economics are so critical?
Well, what I try to do is maybe elevate issues that are not such a high priority for business leaders. So back in 2008, I was talking about access to capital and people were talking about falling sales, but I'm like, hey, you know, you need capital now, but you also need it in the rebound. A few years ago, I was talking about the tight labor market, and that was driven by partially by the boom after the pandemic, but also just the changes in demographics where we're not growing our labor force anymore. So as things change, I see something going on and I'm like, oh, this is a big business impact. So I had on AI, I had artificial intelligence in the back of my head for 20 years. And people would say, oh, AI is going to be big. And I'm like, yeah, I heard that. I heard that decades ago, and maybe it's making progress, but you know, Google Maps is getting better. Okay, fine. And then with ChatGPT, I said, holy cow, I think it was cow, I said, holy cow, this is a game changer. And I started doing more research, both on the current status of AI and on past technological innovations to get some perspective.
So with that, with the emergence of, you know, of ChatGPT and really just all the language models that really produced it, what are some of the things that you, the key findings of that, that you've seen that are, you know, what it came out in 20 and that propelled over the last just few years of that side? Has research kind of been in alignment to it, or what are you seeing for the future of that as we continue to scale?
Yeah, well, there are two messages that I'm giving a lot. The first is sort of a macroeconomic, what does this mean for society? And then the other one is, in what way is it going to affect business? And the big picture is, I've got a book on my shelf on the Industrial Revolution, talking about how spinning wheels for taking wool and cotton and making thread were connected to water. And then the weaving looms were connected, and that put weavers out of the job, and the Luddites were there. And, you know, various technological innovations, steam engine, electricity, railroad, blah, blah, blah. And what we see is that efficiencies drove down prices relative to wages. So people were better off in the aggregate. People had two or three sets of clothes for the first time in human history. And, you know, today you walk into your closet, how many shirts do you have? You know, how many pairs of shoes? So people got better off for the most part, but that's an average. And there were always some people who were worse off, that they had specialized skills that were very much in demand until the new technology came and boom, things were. So I think that the big message on the big picture is, hey, humanity is going to be better off, but there are going to be some people who are worse off because they have specialized skills.
Right. And I think that's part of the pieces of what you even mentioned before of even just your work, where you want to, not only on the AI side, but on the business front as well, as connecting the dots between the economy and what on the business decisions, correct? So with that of how we're really transitioning over and the social impacts, the economical, the business impacts of AI that we're kind of going forward, do you see on with talking with other business leaders and from your experience and your consulting, is it still trying to wrap around how it's going to be on a business side, or is it more on how do we scale this and how do we future state how the implementation of it?
Yeah, well, the average business leader doesn't know. Or the average business leader thinks he or she knows, but is putting too much confidence on that first guess. So it's a mishmash, and I'm surprised by the number of people who think that ChatGPT is AI and AI is ChatGPT.
Right.
I mean, ChatGPT is wonderful, no doubt about that. But what I see happening is there are some occupations, some tasks where direct work with a chatbot like ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini is huge. Programmers are benefiting directly, and people who write for a living, marketing text writers are doing that. But the big business effect, I believe, and Solomon, after I say this, I'd like you to push back because you have a different perspective. I mean, a different set of people you're talking to. But I think the biggest impact will be AI-driven apps where the user doesn't know anything about AI. So I talked to some electrical contractors, and they're seeing applications for estimating. A general contractor says, hey, here are the blueprints, and says to the electrical contractor, you want to bid on installing all the wiring. And so there's an app now that will look at the blueprints and come up with a bill of materials, how many feet of wire, how many light sockets, and then an estimate of how much labor. They cannot do it all. I think there needs to be a human on trade-offs between current low cost versus flexibility for future changes. The guy who is doing the estimating doesn't need to know how to prompt ChatGPT. The system just works. And I think that is going to be the game changer rather than the people accessing the chatbot themselves. Does that make sense?
No, in what you've seen? Does. I think it kind of brings in, because even here at Solenox, you know, kind of going through it aligns because of we work with other technology or with other companies, and you know, everyone wants to say we want to implement AI, but there's such a background to it. First of all, how to adopt AI into your work stream and into your business. And so then we have to look at the governance of it, you know, so that even with our team and I, we have to really assess, is this data, is there PII? So we kind of call it personal information identifier. So it goes through on, are you in the healthcare? So we have to follow HIPAA compliances. Is your business prepared for that? So there's so many structures of building the framework before we have that. So to your point, and then that's part of the adoption side, you know, of having to teach everyone prompt engineering for your team, that's going to waste time. That's going to take time apart. So where do you add in also keeping in the human and the looping in on that side, but how do we think of security? How do we make sure that when it's going through, for example, we work a lot with Copilot and Microsoft back, because we're a partner with Microsoft, is how do we implement that inside and how is it done effectively? And there's phases to it. So I think to your point as well, how do we get to a point of where it's so effective because of the data that's proffered in, making sure you have the effective data? How, you know, when it comes through for the app you're going for the electrical side, where does the engineer come into part where he doesn't have to deal with it? It gives them everything that they need to pump and enhances his job. So providing these are these things that you might want to look for, you know, and I think that's the powerhouse of it.
Yeah. And, you know, this raises in my mind a long tension in business and other areas as well between the efficiency of central control versus the inefficiency of central control, where diversification, pushing decisions down the organization often is superior. The best economic article ever written, Friedrich Hayek's The Use of Knowledge in Society, is about, hey, decisions have to be made about the specific information of the time and the place. But on the other hand, there needs to be some kind of central issue of, hey, everybody needs to protect privacy, corporate secrets. And I have encouraged people to play with ChatGPT first or one of the other bots, and then to look for specific applications relevant to that person's task. So, you know, maybe you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing company. You see that the company has a new order and you want to sort of translate that order into purchasing requirements. There's probably an app for that. So you could have a company benefiting from various employees finding specific apps for their particular tasks. But you walk into a company and you may find that they have an enterprise system with accounting and production data and inventory management. And maybe you ought to get a system that has AI all through that rather than one app from one person and another app from another person. And what should the company do? And as an economist, my professional opinion is I don't have a clue. But I know that companies need to start experimenting as fast as possible, subject to some safeguards. But I also know there's advantages to having one system that sort of, you know, when the new order comes in, it's not only a purchasing issue, it's a scheduling time on the machine issue, it's a HR issue. What do you think is the future there? Is it going to be a lot of piecemeal or a lot of big integrated systems or a combination?
Yeah, I really think that it's going to be a little bit of piecemeal side of it as we go through. So we kind of follow through. I don't know if you've heard the term film model. So film kind of goes into there's finance, there's IT, there's legal, and then there's marketing, right? So especially with these pieces, if you're going to ERPs on an enterprise level, there are so many pieces to kind of come forward. So just from our side of just even coming forward with a client that's coming on that wants to partner, wants to expand their cloud architecture, right? That which is all of the AI is going to be based off of plus of your on-prem data that you have. You know, first we look at, you know, how is the workflow? How is the business working now at this point? And then where you want to go with AI, you start with just a simple task. And as you've mentioned even before, what do you want? What do you want automated? What do you want to enhance from the humors? We call it from external users, that's your customer. Then you have internal customers from inside the organization. So from this side, I feel like it's twofold because it depends on whether or not you want to integrate it into the whole enterprise, but there needs to be a proper before it goes into production live. There are these pieces of dev and sandbox, as we call it, before it follows through. So to answer your question, I think it's going to be piecemealed as you want to kind of follow through before you get it out there. You want to do your due diligence. But I think just of how fast it's moving and how businesses want to be able to be competing with each other and staying forward, it's going to be an adjustment. But I feel the groundwork as a whole, it should stay as the fundamentals. You know, with Microsoft, we call it zero trust. So you want to keep these groundwork fundamentals on proper data. Is the data being used? You know, who can access it? Where are the pieces where the AI stops, where the human can loop in? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, one of the things I learned as I started applying economics to specific business challenges is that whenever there's a great success, there have been mistakes. And if you want an error-free system, you're on the wrong planet. And companies will have to accept that there are going to be mistakes. But it sure makes sense to say, hey, if we send the wrong email marketing message to somebody, that's a small mistake. If we send somebody a $10 million refund and the person doesn't deserve a $10 million refund, that's a big mistake.
It is.
And so you need to say, let's experiment where we can make a lot of small mistakes. Small mistakes are good. Small and easily identifiable mistakes are good. You know, if I have a formula in Excel and it's off by 1%, that's a real pain. If it's off by 600%, it just stands out and I fix it right away. Right. So what you want is experiments that help you make many small but easily identifiable errors.
Yeah. And you know, and I'm so curious, Bill, of just from your journey as how it's evolved from economist to now strategic advisor on the side. So seeing where it led up and kind of, you know, when you're doing your research of, as you said, when ChatGPT came out, because AI is more than just the chatbots. It's so much wider as they're kind of going more to the AGI of artificial general intelligence, you know, whether or not we're how far we are into that side, but it's approaching faster just of how, you know, these leading for, you know, ChatGPT, and then you have Anthropic. And so what has been your position watching AI from early machine learning to now to the frontier systems of what Anthropic's doing? And so what are your thoughts as it continues to evolve? In your perspective?
Well, I'm going to go backwards in history and talk about what we've seen from other great technological revolutions.
Yeah.
So I was reading, and I've forgotten where, an account of the early days of the automobile industry. 1908, there were over 250 companies manufacturing automobiles. Mm-hmm. 250. And, you know, one of them was a guy named Henry, Henry Ford. And, you know, there was Chrysler and Buick. But most of those failed. The thing is, not only did most of those companies fail, but from 1908, the auto industry just boomed. I think that we have many companies in the AI space that will fail. But the AI usage is going to boom. And, you know, 5 years from now, it's like, how did we ever get by without it? But we will also see the corpses of numerous companies that said, hey, we're going to try it this way. We're going to try it that way. And it will take a while for the industry to figure out what is the right business model. Both for the LL, the large language model, what's the right business model for specific applications? And do you want to specialize with very narrow applications or be broad with an enterprise-wide system? And when is this best? When is that best? And a lot of experimentation, and there'll be a lot of companies going by the wayside, but the result will be companies that are really well fit for the tasks that they take on.
Yeah. And from your perspective, Doctor, is what do you see just from your experience, what you've seen, you know, what separates companies that are learning more from failures that are, what are you seeing just from what separates the companies from doing failure on the side to getting to that level of where they're now performing, they're hitting their metrics, they're hitting their initiatives on that? What separates them on that?
Well, you know, I think that in a relatively high stakes situation, it is making sure that you test the system frequently. I was listening to a presentation by the 911 call center direct up in Thurston County, Washington. And if you call 911 in Olympia, Washington now, the AI answers the phone. And it's like, oh, wow. But what I learned was that a majority of their calls have been non-emergency calls. Hey, there's a dog barking. You know, the neighbor's playing the stereo too loud, right, or where do I pay my water bill? So the AI handles the non-emergency stuff, but the AI has been trained, if this could be an emergency, throw it to the human. Like right away, if in doubt, the human takes over. And then they rolled it out during the quietest part of the day when they got very few calls, but they still had to have people standing by. And they monitored the AI conversation in real time. So the human listened in and said, yeah, this is the right approach, or no, it's not. So they tested it significantly before they actually put it in play. And they sort of said, your judgment is very narrow. And then over time, the judgment grows. Okay, we have confidence that it's making the right decision 99.99% of the time. And, you know, even if you're running something not as critical as 911, you know, when there are big dollars, big customer relationships, big employee relationships, big government rules, I think that gradual step it up, monitor it over time is probably the best strategy.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, that just now it's even gotten to just 911 now, we're upwards getting involved in. Sometimes it's getting so well with just the voices of what Voice Labs, I believe, is going into it, that it's hard to distinguish now at this point. So it's just phenomenal just where we're going in this time.
Yeah. And there have been so many bad customer no service interactions that people sort of have a bad attitude. I think their attitude will improve if they have a good experience and then later realize this was an AI experience. Like, I don't really care whether it's a human or not, so long as I get my issue resolved easily, quickly.
We had to do with a previous, because mostly we work with the mid-market side, because now you're getting into much more of how to effectively. But we've had a smaller business for a restaurant, and they had the same issue of they wanted to take away of the hostess and the host being able to call and getting forward. But they had a problem with their previous side because it was the automation they had was very limited. So we put through, as you said, you get a testing, you get the piecemeal, what are the usual frequent questions and so forth. Now, and we've put in this assistant, this AI assistant that was through Microsoft, that helped it through. And now the guest from the host, it plays in, they'll say, let me think about that. And you wouldn't even know like of it because it's like, let me check. And then if they don't know, it says, let me stand by, let me get somebody to check in. It'll bring in a real right. person that comes through. And from the external customer has no idea. As to your point, I just want to make sure that my inquiry is getting fulfilled. And I don't have to feel like I'm always in a waiting or I'm having to say, a representative, please, of that side. So really takes into that side. So with that, and I really love to get your perspective, Bill, just of this side, what are the shifts that you're seeing just of recently that business leaders should be paying attention to as they go forward as this?
Yeah, I think that they have been in many cases in a reactive mode. Mm-hmm. As opposed to a proactive mode. Reactive is, hey, I just heard that there's this system that can do this. Maybe we ought to do it. The proactive, and first of all, that is good. It's not entirely bad. But what we're moving to is the more proactive, where the business leader says, okay, what is a dull, repetitive task that occupies our people and we can reduce the burdens of that. And one of my first articles about artificial intelligence, probably in 2023, talked about industries that would be slow to adopt because they were high stakes industries, life or death decisions, and very litigious. You know, so if you make a mistake, you know, big lawsuit. And I said healthcare. And immediately somebody, I've forgotten his name, called me up and talked about his healthcare system, and it, which is now being used by my doctor, which is I have a physical exam, the conversation's recorded, and the AI drafts a medical record entry for the doctor to review. Well, doctor time is very, very valuable.
Very much.
And so. Doctors, I probably dislike entering medical records as much as an salesperson in the same thing. They like talking to clients. They don't like typing into the CRM there. And the AI can draft an entry that the doctor or the salesperson then reviews for accuracy and completeness. And the Kaiser system thinks it saves 8 to 10 minutes per patient visit. And for a doctor seeing patients every 20 or 30 minutes, and in a field with a labor shortage, this is just wonderful. So the everyday business leader probably ought to walk through the office, walk through the warehouse, the factory, whatever, and try to understand what are the tedious tasks that gobble up valuable time and that people don't like.
Right.
And, you know, we're in a tight labor industry. And if you can take away the least pleasant jobs from a worker, that worker's going to stay a lot longer and you'll be better off as a business.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of one of the things as part of like when we do the discover and uncover, and I'm glad that you have that, even on the team adoption, is going into what are the pieces of, and we kind of break it down into teams of from the company. You get a perspective of what is the single pain point, as you said before, is usually typing in and doing Copilot now, as or any other Fireflies or any note taker now can kind of digest that and make that more summarized. But when you kind of look into, as you were saying before, like what are the key, you know, pain points that we can remove? And you, if you get that, if you really focus in on the team, and then go through and how do I make that team? It goes back to how can I make the where people are worried about AI is going to take jobs. And, you know, I'm always a proponent of we want to keep the job, but how does it enhance that coordinator, that manager to take care of their day-to-day tasks? And then how can they move it into really how can I make the business better? Or what can I do in my role that is elevated? Because now I'm saving all of it this time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Solomon, that is such an important point. And everybody ought to rewind and listen to you say that again. So I realized 20 years ago that the demographics of the labor force is such that, and this is an important, based on our demographic estimates, the current decade from 2020 to 2030 will have the lowest growth of the working age population since the Civil War.
Wow.
The lowest really? Growth of the working age population since the Civil War. And the way to deal with the tight labor market, number one, increase the productivity of workers, not by whipping them harder, but by making them more productive. Secondly, increase employee retention. So after you've trained somebody, brought them up to speed, keep that person there. And thirdly, better recruiting, which comes from having happier workers and you get word of mouth. The key person is the first level manager, not the executives. The executives have a role to set standards for that. The first level manager has so many reports due and check off lists, so many obligations that the first level manager is not spending a lot of face-to-face time with the employees doing the work. And if the AI can free up the manager's time and the manager gets high-level direction, talk to your people face-to-face, right. Have a conversation. What are you doing that is bothersome, that is frustrating, that takes too much time, very little satisfaction? Worker may not know there's an app for that that will make his life easier. The manager may very well know once the manager understands this is a frustration point. And you will get higher productivity from your workers, better retention, better recruiting. But the manager is just so overwhelmed now. So from a senior management perspective, I would say start by helping your first level managers get through their day spending more face time with employees. So there it is, AI as a way to increase face time.
To your point, like we've had, it was back in June, a client was migrating over to Azure, to the cloud. They're going from AWS to Azure. And as we transitioned over, they wanted to implement Copilot into what's called Power Apps, Microsoft Power Apps. It does those internal apps. But to the point of it, it's getting into, and I'm bringing up the story of it, we're working with the manager side, is there, we use kind of Confluence or Jira, where there's documentation, what is the onboarding side for people coming forward? What does that look like to get started? And normally, you know, the manager, when someone comes on, you know, they shadow, they want to make sure that has that point, but where can we input AI into this side? Now, problem that we had though, as us coming in as consultants, as we were their partners, is that the people, after really kind of understanding, they were afraid, because if they put their day-to-day task into it, they feel like you're about to replace me, because they've been hearing these tasks of AI, and, you know, with all of these firings that have been going on, it's a valid concern. So we've had to shift it. And again, it's called into piecemealing, right? Because you're dealing with not only on the technical, the operational capacity, but now you're dealing with the cultural of the employees and so forth else. So what we initially did was we kind of come together talking with the managers on this side, knowing from the manager level and what have been the pain points just from what they've thought about. Again, it's takes time of iteration after iteration, but it's come to a point that we've been able to build out a proper Confluence onboarding board to help people set up, and takes the time away that has it to where the manager can focus more in, that can eliminate those questions that have it to where the worker came in. And it takes away time. Now the manager has more time to focus on the hiree or the team lead. And it builds upon this. And again, the more proper data that they have for the role, for the team, and then you're kind of shifting, you're going higher and higher down up the side. It really makes an impact. Those small increments, as you said, from the doctor's standpoint, saving 10 minutes adds on, and it's a snowball effect.
You know, we had every November, Nobel Prizes are awarded, and I was reading some of the work of the new Nobel, two of the new Nobel laureates in economics, because, you know, that's what I do. And there had been research about job gains and job losses in companies that are innovating. And, you know, we think of automation and other innovations as cutting employees. The companies that innovate, on average, do not lay off people. If they find greater productivity, what they do is they lower their costs and they split that gain between their profit and lower prices so that they can grow the business. And then they hire more people.
Right.
Even though they need fewer people per step, they are doing so much more volume that the innovative companies expand their employment. The companies that have to do layoffs are the ones that did not innovate.
Interesting.
Now, I don't know exactly how you message this to your employees, but it could be, first of all, we are trying to expand without having to add more people. It's hard to hire. And in many, particularly factory and industrial applications, there's something they call the silver tsunami of people with my hair color who are about to retire, and they really dominate manufacturing and construction. And when those people leave, wouldn't it be great if we can still run the business? You know, the young guy in shipping doesn't have a job if there isn't a person running the big machine in the factory, but that person's going to retire. How do we deal with that? So good productivity improvement is actually good for keeping the business going and keeping jobs there.
So to that point of what you were saying, you know, how can leaders, even from high up, how can they, what would you think, how can they foster that kind of innovation mindset across to their teams or whatnot?
You would say? You know, I think it's communication, and I think it's also a track record. But one of the things that builds employee retention is trust. And one of the ways to get trust is just talk to people. What the employee is most likely to be suspicious of is the manager who's not talking to the employee. The boss is talking to the big boss. I wonder what they're talking about. Are they talking about our jobs? But if the manager just sort of takes time and has some staff meetings, but a lot of one-on-ones, hey, this is what our plan is. Our plan is to serve more customers do greater volume without increasing our staff. An employee would say, fine, we don't want to get rid of staff. We want to increase our volume. I think employees will feel good. There's some cases where that would be a lie, you know, and customer service jobs are probably the case where, you know, if you've got 1,000 people and you're in a call center for some big bank or insurance company, you'll probably have to do layoffs as you implement AI. But in many, many parts of the world, you will not have to do layoffs if you do
it. Yes. And I really love that piece of it, because it doesn't matter in me kind of realizing further on just in my career, just now going further, everything is based off relationships. It's trust based off relationships. Business, whether it's the employee level, whether it's a CEO, whether lead generation or for dealing with, you know, even from political, everything is relationship based on a human level. Yeah. And that's what drives of a business.
Humanity, right.
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been great, Bill, because it really kind of perfect perspective of this. You know, I want to ask, on top of the trust and so forth that you, and communication that you had, if there's one thing that leaders had, you know, to prepare for like this major change for the next 6 to 12 months for their business, and from your experience, what would you think that is the key side of that that they can implement to help them grow?
I think it's a perspective. When I look at our history, Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence talked about a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I didn't understand the pursuit of happiness for most of my life. But I think what it really means is people able to pursue their own goals, their own ends, their own satisfaction. And for some people, you know, family is important. For some people, religion is important. For some people, golf is important. But for most people, a sense of having done something worthwhile. Yes. And maybe that's welding something together. Maybe it's helping with a customer challenge. But people really thrive on accomplishing something. So I think AI, broadly speaking, will allow us in our leisure to have more leisure for the things that give meaning to our life, but also more satisfaction at work by getting the useful things done and not doing the trivial garbage tasks that are incidental to every job.
Yeah, I do agree. I think it's really, even seeing it now, just on how much value, even for the sales reps now for customers of having it, to now it can give you suggestions on what to ask based off of the transcript of it. You know, it can be able to provide and be this soundboard, this assistant on the side to help you along with that.
And so one of the best questions a manager can ask, I got this from Dick Finnegan, who wrote a great book called The Stay Interview. One of the best questions a manager can ask an employee is, hey, when you're coming into work in the morning, what are you looking forward to?
That's a good point. I love that.
And let's try to throw the employee more tasks that the employee will look forward to. And the companion question is, what do you not look forward to? And let's try to pull that away from the employee, because businesses are going to continue to have employees. And let's give them the kind of stuff that they want to do and not the kind of stuff that they dread doing.
Right. And it goes back, as you said, from Thomas Jefferson, that pursuit of happiness. It's feeling purposeful, even with someone that's coming on, whether it's a contractor. What am I doing that I can say that I've provided value? And I think that's key outside.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, this has been great. So I always ask every guest that kind of comes on for, let's say, you know, ChatGPT came out. So for ChatGPT 9 or 10, as we evolve into this next 5 to 6 years, what would you, if you had a magic wand, what would you love AI to do, whether it's from your consulting experience or whether it's just to your personal, what would you love to have it accomplish?
I'm quoting somebody and I've forgotten who, and whoever I'm, you know, quoting, sorry, I don't recall your name, but the person said that AI is enabling people to create art without spending a lot of time doing it, to write poetry without spending a lot of time doing it, but they still have to do the laundry and wash the dishes. It's like, no, let's go backwards. I want to write the poetry. I want to create the art. You get the dull tasks done. So, you know, we don't have a Roomba, you know, the vacuum cleaner, but it's like, yeah, that's what we ought to do with our life. You know, have a robotic vacuum cleaner, because that's something I don't get any satisfaction from.
Right. So it would be that being able to get to this next step, would you say, like the robotics of it doing the cleaning your laundry and like making sure after you clean, make a big dinner, like, oh, for Thanksgiving, now you have something to does that does the dishwasher right. for you, that builds out, that does the yeah. cleaning.
But it's not just robotics. You know, come tax time, it's like, okay, I don't want to do taxes. You know, pay the bills. Paying bills has gotten hugely better than it used to be.
Absolutely.
But there's still room for improvement. Dealing with, you know, car maintenance and just when my wife says, hey, Bill, you know, this light switch isn't working. It's like, my wife is really smart. She could fix the blankety blank switch herself, but apparently that's my job. You know, get all of the menial stuff taken care of. But I'll tell you, Claude or Chad, I use Claude a lot. And on home repairs, it's pretty dang good.
It is really good, isn't it? It is really good. Like on, even from our business standpoint of having it programmed, because we have one for the engineering team and we have one for the executive team. And, you know, you put in all the data inputs of where you have it. And it's just been so, the way you've personalized and you get in all the key inputs, the KPIs, and have it understand the business. It can really do a really good job. And now with Claude Code, now that Claude Code, if you don't know it, now it can be able to input its own. So it helps us with, you know, whenever we have to do infrastructure code and build out the infrastructure within someone's, you know, Google or Azure for Microsoft's cloud, it helps to build it. So again, it's iteration and you have a human loop in, but it really helps to that. So it's exciting. It's very exciting, Bill. So with before we come off, you know, for the audience that want to learn more, that want to kind of get your perspective of, from your economic perspective and your consulting, where can they learn more about you, Bill?
My website is ConnerlyConsulting.com. And if you put in Bill Connerly, Google will fix your spelling errors. My name is frequently misspelled, but Google's good. I guess that's an AI app to figure that out. I write regularly for Forbes.com. I'm there. I put out a free monthly newsletter on the current state of the economy that people can get from my newsletter. And I'd be happy to have people reach out to me on LinkedIn. But I tend to ignore just the random people. So mention that you heard the podcast here and connect to you on LinkedIn.
Perfect. For everyone that's listening, that's staying tuned, thank you so much. Bill, again, it was so great having you on. If we don't hear from you, I hope you have a good holidays, have a good, great Christmas, and we'll talk soon next time.
Happy holidays to you too.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at Solonox.net.